take a bottle of Tide, stick some antlers on it, boom, Yuletide. Steal someone's credit card,
write iTunes on it,
boom. Take some duct tape, stick it on your mother-in-law's mouth, boom, silent night.
How is everybody? Well, it is great to be back with you here at Timberlake, and I've got to say that this Redmond campus is looking pretty amazing. Yeah! For our Issaquah campus, our Duval campus, our online campus, you guys look okay, but it is good to have you with us. We are in a series that we started last week called The Best Christmas Ever! Whoa! Is that a lot of pressure or what? The Best Christmas Ever. In some ways, it's a pretty cool title because it creates these images of no stress and lots of fun and lots of laughter and creating memories with our family and no financial pressure, right? Because it's going to be the best Christmas ever. And yet at the same time, if we're honest, most of us are probably thinking, yeah, that's not what my Christmas is going to be like. It's not how the season has started. It's not how the season has ever gone. And so I don't know that this is going to be the best Christmas ever. And so there's this tension and this stress of trying to keep up with everybody else. And then to make it worse, this time of year, we start getting Christmas cards in the mail, and it seems like all these families have gotten together for their glamour shots, right? It's like, oh, ugh, right? Or the Christmas letters. Oh, those are always great. It's like, our family had the best year ever. You know, we got raises, we won the lottery. Our four-year-old is doing so good in the violin, they're going to be in the symphony this year. And it's like, oh, are you kidding me? Your 10-year-old just got accepted into Harvard. You got a 4,000-square-foot house for $80,000. I mean, it's just, I don't get it. Because you look at that, and then you look at your own life and say, man, I'm just glad my kid made it through the second grade. And that's not an exaggeration, right? It's like, man, I'm glad my marriage stayed together. Thank God for the guest room. You know, thank God we had a little bit of space that we could spread out. And I'm only half joking. I mean, I just look at how my season has started. I have a 16-year-old daughter, and I love her to death. But twice this week, not because she was sick, but because she just wasn't in the mood, twice this week, she literally skipped school. Said, I refuse to go. And I come up with as creative as punishments as I can. I mean, for her, it was like $30 a day that you miss school. You're paying me. Because I want you to be out there then working, babysitting, whatever. And so that's what she spent her weekend doing, is trying to earn back this money. I have a 13-year-old daughter who one day this week, she just wasn't in the mood to be in school anymore, so she walked home. That's not an exaggeration. This is my life. I've got an 8-year-old son. A couple weeks ago was grandparents' day at school, and so I was joking with him. I said, hey, how about I put some beer inside your lunch? And he looks at me seriously and says, you'll have to put it in a special container, otherwise they'll know. I said, Jaden, I wasn't going to do that, you sicko, you weirdo, right? And so I think that probably all of us to some extent can relate to wanting a great Christmas, because that's how we remember it from when we were kids. But it's because when we were kids, we weren't aware of the chaos going on in the background. We weren't aware of the family tension. And yet, regardless of how your holiday season has started out, I want you to know it is possible to have the best Christmas ever. We're going to talk about that today and what that looks like. There's a 5-star hotel in Paris called the Hotel Ritz. It's one of the most prestigious and luxurious hotels in the world. It's been closed the last couple of years because they're doing a bunch of renovations. And in the midst of renovating, they came across a picture that's been hanging in one of the rooms now for well over 50 years. And since they had this gap of time that they said, hey, we're not going to open anytime soon. They'll open sometime in 2015. They said, let's get some experts in to talk to us about this painting. And sure enough, they get these experts in, and they look at the painting and determine it is one of the early works of art of an artist named Charles Le Brun. Doesn't mean much to us, but considered one of the greatest French painters of all time. And so the hotel connected with Christie's and said, if we put it up for auction, what could we expect from this painting? And they said a couple $100,000. It's been just hanging in one of the rooms. And so Christie's puts it up for auction, and it fetches almost $2 million. And I came across that story, and it got me thinking, what are the things in my life that are in the background that maybe have become white noise that I don't realize the value anymore? I don't see the uniqueness. I don't understand how special it is. And I ask you that question because in these final days leading up to Christmas, we're going to get so busy. We're going to have so many family obligations. We're going to be rushing around shopping. We're going to be going to parties. We're going to have so many things going on that it is going to be very, very easy for us to overlook the important things. It's going to be very, very easy for us to have the things of value becoming white noise in the background. Now, you already know this, but in America, Christmas is a celebration of the birth of Jesus. You go back a couple thousand years, it actually started as a pagan holiday called Saturnalia. Don't have time to get into all of that, but for Christ followers, we've used it as for centuries to celebrate the birth of Jesus. And so for us, Jesus really is the reason for the season. Now, regardless of whether or not you want to make Jesus a part of this season is up to you. I'm not going to judge you. We're all at different places in our spiritual journey. I don't care if you want to say happy holidays instead of Merry Christmas. Hey, that stuff doesn't bother me. But I do want to say to all of us, but specifically those of us who are followers of Jesus Christ, that this is a great season to connect with Jesus. This is a great opportunity to renew our minds on what he is like, because everywhere we go this season, somewhere in the background is going to be a picture of Jesus. There's going to be ongoing reminders everywhere we go that are pointing us to him. You'll hear his name sung in Christmas carols. You'll see his image replicated in some nativity scene. You'll hear the story of his birth weaved in and out of various Christmas movies. You'll receive cards in the mail with special verses or quotes that point you to the significance of who he is. And I just want to encourage you, as you're traveling, as you're busy going to parties or cooking, getting ready for family to come over, as you're in the midst of the chaos of this season, I just want to encourage you to not let Jesus become some picture hanging in the background that we lose sight of, that we forget about, that becomes white noise. Instead, use it as an opportunity to connect or to reconnect with Jesus. Because if you can find a way to do that, I'm telling you, it is going to be the best Christmas ever. And I say that with confidence because whenever you read through the stories of Jesus that we find in the scriptures and people interacting with him and connecting with him, every single time there is something powerful that happens. There's something emotional. In fact, the number one emotional reaction that we see when people connect or reconnect with Jesus in the scriptures is we read these words, they were astonished. That's the description. So the crowds, they're astonished when they listen to Jesus teach. The disciples, they're astonished at his wisdom. Everywhere he went, people were astonished at his power. They were astonished at the authority with which he taught. They were astonished at the miracles he would perform. And so a great question for all of us to consider this Christmas season, a great question for all of us to be asking ourselves is this: when was the last time I was astonished by Jesus? When was the last time I truly was in awe of him? Like I showed up to some setting, whether it was a church service or I opened my Bible to read something about him or I saw him displayed in some way in some store, and it just hit me who he really was. When was the last time I was astonished by Jesus? That's a very loaded question because we're all going to answer it differently based on how we grew up. Right? If you grew up Jewish, you have this idea of Jesus that he was a great leader and a great teacher. But that's pretty much where his uniqueness ends. If you grew up Buddhist, you've got an idea of God, a picture of Jesus that he is an enlightened man, very much like the Buddha. But again, that's where his uniqueness stops. If you grew up Muslim, you consider Jesus to be a holy prophet, but that's pretty much it. If you grew up in Scientology, you imagine Jesus to be an implant forced on a thetan about a million years ago. No, I don't have a clue what that means. All right, because I've never done drugs. I don't understand that. But then you add to all of the different ideas that we have already of what Jesus is like, and you put pop culture into it. Now it gets even more confusing, because in our culture, Jesus has become somewhat of a celebrity, right? Maybe you have this. I actually own Dashboard Jesus, right? Dashboard Jesus is who we put on the dashboard to keep us safe. Or maybe Answer Me Jesus is the Jesus that you have in your mind. It's like this eight ball where you ask Jesus questions. Or probably one of my favorite are these Last Supper after dinner mints that you're supposed to eat after whatever dinner you have. And then there's Jesus bandages. And I love the description on the back. It says, perfect for cuts, scrapes, or locust bites. All right? Or here's a bank. I'm saving up for Jesus. And we have all of these different images of Jesus portrayed in our culture, and it's ridiculous. And at times, it's probably even a little bit offensive because we've made him out to be way too normal. And there's something in every one of us that wants to believe when it comes to Jesus that his robe was a little bit brighter than everybody else's. His teeth were a little bit straighter. He was taller. He spoke with a much deeper voice than everybody else did. We want to believe that when the wind blew his hair, his perfectly feathered hair never moved, like it had product in it. It's just like we have this idea of Jesus that he was absolutely unique in every single way. And yet the prophet Isaiah, a very popular prophet among the Jewish people, hundreds of years before the birth of Jesus, talks about him in this way. He says, there was nothing beautiful or majestic about his appearance, nothing to attract us to him. Ironically, the same thing that could be written about Pastor Ben. But here's the thing. We read that about Jesus, and it's a little disturbing. And it explains why for the first 30 years of his time on this planet, nobody really noticed anything all that unique about him. On occasion they would, but for the most part, everybody just thought he's one of us. And then he finally starts to teach. And he finally starts telling stories about the kingdom of God and performing miracles and speaking with authority. And everybody is confused. And they're saying, come on! Are you kidding me? I mean, we babysat you, Jesus. We changed your diaper. Come on, Jesus, I went to school with you. Remember gym class? I outran you. Really? There's something unique about it? I watched you rough frame houses with your dad. He was a carpenter. Come on. Are you really all that special? It's very disturbing for the people who knew him most when they began to understand there was something unique about him. And what's interesting is here we are a couple thousand years later, and there's still something about us, I think, that gets a little uncomfortable when we think about the unique claims that Jesus made. And we like to say he is a good man. He certainly can make your life better if you somehow receive him into your life. We use all of this spiritual terminology, but we like to, for the most part, I think, just have safe answers, because some of his more outrageous claims just mess with our mind too much. And yet, when you take the time to read through the biographies of Jesus, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and you read about eyewitness accounts, and you hear quotes attributed to Jesus, it becomes very obvious there was something different about him. And so I think it's important this time of year to refresh our minds on who Jesus was, but even along those same lines, who Jesus was not. So I think it's important that we remind ourselves, Jesus did not come to earth to be a role model. Jesus didn't come to earth to be a role model. Now think about this. Jesus never played the role that so many of us play. I am a husband and a father. Jesus was neither of those. Pastor Ben's a professional dancer. Jesus wasn't that. Some of you are mothers. Some of you are grandmothers. Many of you work for Microsoft or Google or Amazon. Jesus didn't have that kind of intense pressure in regards to keeping up with a world that was moving a million miles a minute. And so the very things we need role models for in our life, we don't necessarily get from Jesus. And that doesn't downplay his significance or who he was. It's just to say that wasn't his primary role. Another thing Jesus didn't do is Jesus didn't come to earth to be a good teacher. Now, I think we'd all agree Jesus had amazing teachings. Jesus said, hey, when somebody hurts you, you need to forgive them. It was Jesus who taught, treat people the same way you want to be treated. Don't worry about tomorrow and the pressures of tomorrow. You have enough to worry about today. Just focus on here and now. When people would try to pressure Jesus to go this way or that way, Jesus, dealing with the stress, said, nobody can tell me where I can and can't go. I'm sorry, that was Kanye West. Sometimes I get those guys confused. All right, that was a little arrogant. All right, Jesus had lots of great teachings. And again, we'd agree with that. But so much of what he taught was incredibly impractical and even impossible. When Jesus was talking about behavior, he said, be perfect as your Father in heaven is perfect. Whoa. Jesus, when he was talking about lust, says, hey, if your eyes cause you to lust, like gouge out your eye and go around blind. A well-meaning individual comes to Jesus and says, hey, master, what can I do to receive eternal life? And Jesus looked at him and he said, go sell everything you have, give to the poor, and then come follow me. We don't even believe that. I've never done that. You've never done that. We've never told anybody to do that. And so much of what he taught was just impractical, if not impossible, which when you step back, you understand the context of so much of his teaching was to help us understand you can never measure up to God. Doesn't downplay his teaching, just that wasn't his primary role. Jesus didn't come to earth to establish a new religion. It's interesting because we associate Jesus with religion so much, and yet the people that irritated him the most were the religious ones. Those were the ones there was constantly tension with because Jesus was constantly teaching, your behavior's never going to get you a greater picture of God. Having systems and structure and rules in your life, you're never going to be able to climb a religious ladder high enough to get a glimpse of God. But then he also said, don't worry about it because God's going to come down the religious ladder and he's going to reveal himself to you. Jesus did come to earth to reveal God to us. That's why he came here. Jesus came to earth to reveal God to us. This is so cool because all over the world today, depending on your age, your health, your season of life, people are anywhere from desperate in wanting to know what God is like to curious. Depending on age, depending on health, there's a curiousness or a franticness about what God is like. And if he did not choose to reveal himself to us, we'd have no clue. That's why for thousands of years before Jesus came, people always had this idea of God that he was mad at them. And so they would base their situations in life, whether they were healthy or unhealthy, based on what God was like. If they had lots of resources or no resources, that was a description of what God was like and whether or not they had favor with the gods. Trying to understand God, believe it or not, is more difficult than trying to understand how your health insurance works. I mean, it is just so out there. And so if God didn't want to reveal himself to us, he could have kept it a secret. But thankfully, he did want to reveal himself to us, which is why Jesus came to this earth. And it's why one of the disciples of Jesus, who was closest to him, wrote this about him a few years after Jesus had left the earth. He said this in his manuscript. No one has ever seen God. But the unique one, Jesus, who is himself God, is near to the Father's heart. He has revealed God to us. The great church leader, Paul, he wrote a letter to a church in Colossae, and here's what he had to say about Jesus. He said, Christ is the visible image of the invisible God. In other words, if you want to know what God is like, you have to look at who Jesus is. You have to look at how Jesus talked, how he interacted with people. You have to look at his attitudes. You have to look at Jesus. And the more you understand Jesus, the more you look at him, the more you focus on him, the more an idea of God you're going to have. So it makes sense that we do that on a regular basis. And yet, it's difficult and it's challenging. We basically, in our minds, make God out to be what we're like, just a nicer version of ourselves. We tend to hold on to stereotypes of what God is like. And quite honestly, this isn't a bad thing. It's just a human thing. It's just, we're just so concerned about ourselves, and we're so inward focused. It's so difficult to just stop and have an unbiased view of who Jesus is. Now, some of you are going to remember, many of you will remember, because many of you lived back in the early 90s when the Chicago Bulls were on top of the world. And in 1994, they were in game 3 of the semifinals. They were up against the Knicks. And it's such a unique time in the Chicago Bulls history because Michael Jordan was no longer on the team. And so the big superstar, the man, right, was Scottie Pippen. And so he was loving the fame. He was loving the attention. And he was just an incredible player. Well, in game 3 of the semifinals against the Knicks, they have 1.8 seconds left in the game. The score is tied, and Coach Phil Jackson calls a timeout. And he gets his team together, and he speaks some words, and he calls a play, and everybody goes back onto the court except Scottie Pippen. And so everybody's wondering, where in the world is Scottie Pippen? He's our man. And if you totally forget about that whole event or how it folded, you don't follow basketball, I want you to check this out. What a baby. So just take a step back here. The play that was originally written up and put together for Scottie, Coach Jackson had a change of plans when he called the timeout and says, all right, Coach, it's going to you. And that's where Scottie just said, all right, then I'm not playing. And he literally goes and refuses to get back in the game. At some point, Scottie got so obsessed with what was happening and the emotions and the moment that he forgot, this is not about me. This is about us winning. It's about something much bigger than myself. And in this season, it is going to have to be a constant reminder to ourselves that, wait, this isn't about me. It isn't about how I feel when I'm around certain family members. It isn't about my emotions when my kids start arguing with me. It isn't about trying to keep up with the Joneses and trying to keep this thing stress-free. There's something greater at work. And if we can somehow, in the chaos of this season, refocus and understand the value and the importance of Jesus by looking at how he acted with people, how he talked, how he lived, we're going to take this very abstract idea of what God is like, and it's going to become very, very clear. We need to pay attention, because many of us, when we look at God or think about God, we have this idea that he's angry all the time. You better watch out. You better not cry. Others of us, our idea of God, that he's nice. He's just uninterested. He's this cosmic being somewhere in the universe. Or maybe he's Mr. Rogers up there in the sky. I think most of us, if we're honest, our idea of God is that he's just a supersized version of ourselves. Oh, isn't that nice? He likes what I like. He's just better. He's just kinder. He's just nicer. And part of that is we live in a culture that gets to pick and choose things and determine things, and we have contests, and we just say, this is what it's like, and our opinions matter a lot, especially since we have Twitter and Facebook and all of these different types of social media. Our opinion really matters. That's fine. I mean, there's contests all the time in which we get to pick what certain things are like. In fact, I didn't even know this until recently. There are actually Christmas tree contests that you can enter, and you send in a picture of your Christmas tree. And so just for fun, it may be difficult to see the different pictures, but I want you to, in your mind, whether it's the top right or the bottom right, top left, bottom left, to kind of get a picture of what you think would be the best Christmas tree ever. All right, now, We're not going to actually have people raise their hands, but here's what my guess is. My guess is that when you're trying to determine what is the best Christmas tree in any particular contest, is that you're not actually looking at the tree. My guess is that you're looking at the ornaments on the tree. And there's a big difference. I think that many of us, when it comes to understanding God, don't actually look at Jesus. We look at all the ornaments the church has put on him over the years. We look at the style of church service. We look at a certain type of music. We look at what mama said or grandma said. We look at what the preacher did. We look at what someone who wears the label Christian did to us years ago, and we're mad and we don't like God because we're looking at all the ornaments, but we're not actually looking at the person of Jesus. And that's a horrible way of determining what God's like. If you want to know what God's like, you got to remove all of these extra things that people place on him, and you've got to begin to focus on Jesus. And there's lots of ways we could do that. I suppose showing up to a service and listening very intently helps us. Certainly, if you were to ever look through the biographies found in the Bible, Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John, and that's what I'm doing this Christmas season as I'm re-engaging in some of those stories. The more that you get a picture of what Jesus is like, and just try as much as possible to push past the biases, you begin to get a different picture of God. Because that's what he was here for, to reveal God to us. It's why when you read through his teachings over and over, in fact, over 90 times, you hear him say things like, the kingdom of God is like, or the kingdom of heaven is like. He's saying, man, this is what it's about. And yet, after spending 30 years on this planet, there weren't a whole lot of people that understood his uniqueness, and so slowly but surely, he started to reveal who he was. And then it gets to the final days on this planet, and even his disciples are still confused. They don't totally understand that he's revealing God, that he's God in the flesh. And so on one occasion, he's talking about the Father, God the Father, and he's speaking in terms that are very, very personal. And one of his disciples, Philip, is so intrigued that he literally interrupts Jesus. Here's how that interaction went down. Philip said, Lord, show us the Father and we will be satisfied. In other words, if we could have the same glimpse of the Father that you seem to have, I mean, he's so personal to you. For us, it's about rules and structure and do this and don't do this. But if you could just give us a better picture, we'll be happy. And Jesus replied, have I been with you all this time, Philip, and yet you still don't know who I am? Anyone who has seen me has seen the Father. So why are you asking me to show him to you? Don't you believe that I am in the Father and the Father is in me? The words I speak are not my own, but my Father who lives in me does his work through me. This is fascinating to me. I mean, basically what Jesus is saying is, hey, Philip, you've been around me, you've seen the miracles, you've heard my teachings, you've watched how I've interacted, you have had a glimpse of me that people for centuries and millenniums will want to have. You've had an experience, and yet somehow, Jesus became white noise. Jesus became a picture in the background. The marvel, the uniqueness, the awesomeness, it was gone. Philip had just become accustomed to it. And I think you know that it's easy for any of us to do the same thing. That's why Jesus had to say, hey, Philip, the words I speak, it's the Father. My actions, it's the actions of the Father. It's easy for us to show up to church and to hear the stories, especially around Christmas. It's like, let me guess, there was no room for them in the inn, right? It's like we've got this stuff down. It's going to be easy for us to miss. I want to be astonished by Jesus. And I want to say that if your understanding of God has been warped by the church, if some ornament has been placed on Jesus that has totally distracted you, maybe it's been some preacher or someone who wears the label Christian that has truly messed up an idea of what God is like for you, I just want to say I'm sorry. But you can't let them define God for you. You have to get a clear picture of Jesus for yourself. I know this is going to sound rude, and I'm just saying what everybody else thinks, that when I have gone to my kids' elementary school concerts, they're miserable. Yeah, you could, you know, if you're a grandparent, sure, they're cute, right? But, I mean, it's like, are you kidding me? You don't even sound close to what this should sound like. Now, how ridiculous would it be if I walked out of my kids' concert and said, yeah, Mozart, Bach, no good, because of what I heard. No, what I heard was kids just doing their best. And followers of Jesus for centuries and centuries have just done their best. Are we flawed? You better believe it. Do we present a bad image of God? You better believe it. But that's why you're not supposed to look at us. You're supposed to look at Jesus. He reveals what God is like. Don't let anyone define what God is like except for the person of Jesus, because as you do, the assumptions, the misunderstandings start getting cleared up. Last month in Syria, there was a young lady caught in the midst of adultery. And it brought such shame on her family that her dad decided to get involved and tied her up and led her to a pit where she kneeled down. And I've seen video of this, just tragic. She's begging for his mercy, begging for forgiveness, and he wouldn't give it to her. And I saw that, and I thought, this is it. This is our view of God. I bring shame to his name, and he wants to execute me. He wants to shame me. He wants to show me no mercy. And that would make sense, because he's a holy God, and I'm not holy. I don't even come close to living up to his expectations. And so I could say that's what God's like, except when I press the pause button and I go and I reflect on who Jesus was and how he interacted, he found himself in the exact same scenario a couple thousand years ago. He's with a lady who's been caught in the midst of adultery, and the religious leaders want to kill her. They want to stone her because that's what their law says they should do. And Jesus stops everyone and says, well, time out. Who of you has never sinned? You be the one to cast the first stone. He puts them all in the same playing field, and they start to drop the various stones that they have and walk away, and it's finally just Jesus and this woman, and he says, listen, your accusers are gone. I want you to know I don't accuse you. I don't condemn you. Now go and sin no more. That's what God is like. So when we look at Jesus, we learn that God sees people as valuable. We learn that he sees, has a love for them that's unconditional. When we look at the picture of Jesus and just take time, we begin to understand, wow, there's something unique about how he views the human race. And so in your notes, I put this down. Because of Jesus, I can be confident that I matter to God. Now, if you've been a person who regularly attends church for a while, you probably, it just becomes white noise. Do you really believe you matter to God? Because if you struggle with ongoing shame in your life, I don't think you get it. If you struggle with ongoing guilt for things that you've said, God, I'm so sorry. Yes, I keep falling back into the same trap, but I'm trying to honor you. I don't think you get it. If you're always trying to present yourself as a good person, you walk into environments like this and you're trying to put on some image and you would hate for people to know some of the deep, dark secrets about you, then you don't get it. If you hide your failures, if you exaggerate your accomplishments so people think better about you, if you're obsessed with what others see in you, I'm telling you, you do not understand how God views you. You do not understand what God is truly like, that he loves you and he values you not because of what you can do. We know he loves you, we know he values you because Jesus came down the religious ladder and said, I'm not going to make you suffer for all the consequences you ought to suffer for. I'm not going to make you pay for your behavior. I'm not going to make you die as a result of the things you've done. As a matter of fact, I'm going to suffer on your behalf. You matter to God. And as we interact with some of our crazy relatives this season, and as we interact with people that are going to cause us stress, and somehow we can push past that and see the picture of Jesus in the background, let me ask you this. Do you believe other people matter to God as much as you do? I mean, not in theory. I'm saying genuinely they matter as much as you do. Like, who could be sitting next to you at Christmas Eve service that you'd be okay with? If you knew the person sitting next to you had multiple sex partners, would that be okay because you know God values them as much as he values you? How about someone who has stolen a lot of stuff? I mean, maybe you wouldn't feel comfortable having your purse out. But would you see the value that they have? How about someone covered in tattoos and piercings? How about someone with no tattoos and no piercings, but khakis and a button-up? How about an alcoholic? How about a Republican? a Democrat? How about someone who's been divorced 5 times? How about someone who's addicted to porn? How about a card-carrying member of the NRA? How about a same-gender couple? How about someone who has HIV? How about someone who never lifts their hand or participates in music at church? How about someone who always raises their hand, participates in worship? Because let me tell you something, and I hope that this Christmas season, it becomes more and more clear to you. Jesus deeply, deeply, deeply loves you. And he deeply, deeply, deeply loves the person sitting next to you. And he deeply, deeply, deeply loves the people sitting behind you. And he deeply, deeply, deeply loves, especially for those of you on the front row, the person in front of you. May God strip our bigoted attitudes. May this Christmas, Jesus not become white noise in the background, because if we can see and understand his value more and more, I'm telling you, it will be the best Christmas ever. Let's pray. Heavenly Father,